Okay, I want to welcome everyone to the ninth in this series of Shiurim lectures on the part of the Meir Nevuchim, of the Guide for the Perplexed, that deals with the Rambam's negative theology. I'm very happy to be here after a draining week of Sheva Brachas, and now that we were Sameachos and Vekala, we can get back to learning some Torah. Okay, now, I believe that we're up to Perek Nun Ches, which is chapter 58. The last thing we discussed, evidently, was chapter 57, in which the Rambam spoke about the concept of God's oneness, the concept of God being alive, God's not. In other words, concepts of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which the Rambam's conclusion was that the notion of God's oneness has no bearing to our notion of oneness in the world. And by doing that, we discussed the ontological proof and how, in fact, the Rambam would, in fact, actually concur with Kant. The ontological proof is not valid for the simple reason that one cannot discuss these properties of God in a normal linguistic sense. I think that was the last thing we did. The Rambam, in the beginning of Perek Nun Zayin, which is chapter 57, page 139 in the Schwartz edition, introduces the Perek, the chapter, by saying, Ala Ta'orim, which means regarding attributes, Amuk Yoisim Mashakadim, deeper from that which became before this. Meaning that the Rambam is actually, at least telling us, he's bringing us in stages. That, in fact, after the Rambam concludes that Kodesh Baruch Hu cannot be described by normal attributes, that I'm being well aware of the fact that we do make statements about God, that God is one, God is alive, God exists, but these statements too, even though we make these statements about God, they do not have the same meaning. They do not have the same meaning, same meaning that we would infer if we made these statements upon other things other than the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So in other words, what the Rambam is saying is that we're going in stages. First, we cannot assign God any attributes, right? There are attributes we do assign to God. God exists, God is one, God is alive, but these attributes do not have the same meaning when referred to God as when referred to things in the world. Now, on page 142 of the Schwartz edition, which begins Perek Nun Ches, the Rambam is actually going a step deeper. He says, Omak Yoisim Mashakadam, right? And what is this? And the Rambam here, in fact, actually introduces the concept of negativity. In other words, the Rambam's negative theology is, bottom line, going to assert that the only statements we can make about a Kodesh Baruch Hu are statements of what God is not. So, but in any case, the Rambam is telling us explicitly that he's going on to a third level, which is even deeper than the first two levels. And the question that we'll have to raise, along with other issues, is in what sense is this deeper than the other levels? Okay, so now, let's begin on page 142 in the Schwartz edition. That's the edition in Lashon HaKodesh. I do not have a Pinnis edition in front of me. I think it will suffice to actually go through the Schwartz edition. And here the Rambam is going to discuss actually, directly, the concept of negative statements as applied to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rambam begins, page 142, three lines from the bottom. Da, right, one should know, Ki teo hakel yis'ala b'shlilos hu ha'teo hanochem. Right, the true description, if there's any description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a true description, it's a negative description. Shlilus means negativity. In other words, the only description we can truly make about a Kodesh Baruch Hu is negative. Asher ein boi klum mi'i hadiyuk. When a person makes a negative description of God, then there is no, then he's not making any type of an error. And therefore does not indicate any type of a chisson, any lack in the Kodesh Baruch Hu in any state. In other words, the negative description avoids all the pitfalls of any description of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, meaning that, in fact, what the Rambam probably wants to say in this parak is, despite the fact that we say God is one, and God is alive, and God knows, and the statements made about God, the fact is that these descriptions, in addition to not having the normative meaning when applied to God as opposed to when they're applied to other things in the world. In fact, ultimately, the Rambam is actually going to prove this later in the parak, the chapter, ultimately, these descriptions really don't have any meaning, except in a negative sense. In other words, the Rambam is going to say that even when we describe God, and of course the Torah of course describes God, and you know, we have to describe God in certain ways. Nonetheless, the true meaning of these descriptions are actually non-descriptions. They're negative descriptions of God, meaning they're telling us what God is not. That is actually the true nature of these things. In other words, when we make any positive statement of God, right? Nonetheless, positive statements of God, if understood in a positive sense, right? Smack of shituf, which means that we're more than monotheism, right? That we're actually combining with God with something else, the chisaron or a lack of God, kavoshiv har, like we explained above. Roy Eifer Shavila Chatechila Kesel Shlilus Hain Ta'ara Mitzat Mesuyim Uvemahim Shenus Matar Mechiyuvim. So the Rambam is going to go into a discussion. What makes negative statements qualitatively different than positive statements? In other words, what is it about a negative statement that's different than a positive statement? Because a negative statement is also a statement about God. On the basis of my discussion, in which I can distinguish between negative statements and positive statements, then I'll actually explain why, in fact, one can actually use can only use negative statements with respect to God. Okay, so we're on the third line on page 143 in the Swartz edition. The Rambam begins by making a statement is, a description of an object doesn't uniquely identify that object. In other words, sometimes a person, you can describe an object, but by describing that object, the description also applies to other objects too. The Rambam is going to give you an example. You see a person from far away, and you ask, what is that which I see? The name of the will say to you, Bale Chaim. It's alive. Not necessarily a human being, it's a living thing. Certainly, describing a person as a living thing is a proper description. I think the Rambam actually previously described man as being the living thing which speaks. So certainly describing a person's living thing is a description. But of course, if I describe a person as a living thing, I'm not only describing this person or people in general, but I'm including other people and other things too, such as animals. In other words, when I describe a person as a living thing, balechaim, a living thing, what I'm doing is I'm saying that it's not a plant. And he's not a rock. In other words, he's an animal, and it depends how you look at things. At least an animal. Gam ken maya beis beis eyes other vato yadat shish bo guf kolshu achle yadat amahu v'shalta maba beis hazeh v'od lecha ha'ine ein bo maksav le guf shal tzemach v'reisha hu sagichat kolshu. Or for example, if there's a person in the house, and I say, who is that person walking around the house? And you tell me, well, you know, he's not a plant. And it's not a rock. So I also know too that he's an animal. But you don't know what time animals do. In other words, basically, what the Rambam is saying is I can describe the person positively and negatively. I can call him a balechayim, in which I exclude the plant and the rock. Or I could say he's not a plant and a rock. And if he's moving, I assume he's a, you know, he's a balechayim. So in other words, from this aspect, we see that the negative description is equivalent to the positive description. Saying a person is an animal, right, and therefore not a plant and not a rock, is the same thing, in other words, prima facie, to saying that the person is not a plant and not a rock, and therefore he must be an animal. Because we see that both the negative and positive descriptions of the person do, in fact, identify the person, place them in a certain category. They don't uniquely identify the person, but they certainly limit the category into which this person, to which this person belongs. Okay, so in other words, even though we don't uniquely identify the person, but the person, more or less, we've ruled out the other options, namely that he's not a plant and he's not a rock. Now, when I'm saying rock, by the way, I don't mean rock as opposed to some other, you know, inanimate object. Mechsovim, the Rambam probably means, things that I would mine from the ground, like rocks and gold, etc., etc. I think that I'm using a rock just sort of like, that's, a rock is sort of like, I think the spitz inanimate object that everybody's familiar with is a rock, as in, I am a rock. Okay, now, let's go on. So, in other words, from this standpoint, the positive and negative description, Rabbi Sedley, what are you laughing at? Right, okay, fine. So in other words, the description, in other words, the negative and positive description of this object are more or less the same. So, in other words, the Rambam is actually, acting very, very methodically. No, speaking very methodically. If the negative and positive description are more or less the same, so what is the distinction? In other words, how will we distinguish the negative from the positive? In other words, in what way are they different? So says the Rambam, I'm still on page 143, the last two lines from the bottom. A little bit of a poetic way, a liberal translation. What I'm saying is, the approach is different. Then like this. When I use a positive description, all right, I'm trying to somehow describe the object. I'm trying to include the object in something else. So, for example, if I say this thing is a living thing, means living animal. So, I'm definitely taking the object and including it in a larger category, right? Which this category includes living animals and higher. However, if a person says this object is not a plant or not a rock, right? It might be indirectly I'm implying something else, but I'm not explicitly and directly including this object in a larger category. In other words, it might be that on the basis of saying that it's not a plant, not a rock, I might infer in a specific situation, like the Rambam says previously, that he's a living animal. But I have not said he's part of the category of the set of living animals. All I've said is he's not a plant and not a rock. In other words, the approach is different. In the case of a positive, a general positive description, I'm directly placing this object in a category. There's a general description. In the case of a negative description, I'm not directly placing this object in a general set. I'm just saying he's not part of another set. That's what the Rambam is saying. Otherwise, there's a different approach here. Okay, now, says the Rambam, on page 144, I'm on the fourth line, La'acha ha'domazu oima, so answer the Rambam, answer the introduction, I will say, Shekavah huchach ha'chachamayv, this has already been proven rigorously, right? Shekel yis'alahu mechuvav ha'metziyah she'en bo ha'kava kefi she'noichiyach ha'chachamayv. In other words, we're going to prove something. It's interesting, the Rambam has already been proven. It doesn't mean that we proved it already in the Magen Avochen. In other words, historically it's been proven, right? And the Rambam says we're going to prove this later on in this work. When is Rambam going to prove this? He's going to prove this actually in the beginning of the second Chaylik, okay? For Eno Masikim LS Uvdas Hayoysoi Velos Busa. We only know that he exists, but we there's nothing of God's essence that we can actually ascertain. It's very interesting. I want to say, maybe on a little bit of a tangent, that the order of the Magen Avuchim is a very interesting order, because the Rambam speaks about negative theology in this, the first chelik, the first volume of the guide. He only begins the proof of God's incorporeality, and therefore the proof of the assertion that one requires negative theology, only in the introduction to the section of the Magen Avuchim. The question really is, why does the Rambam actually operate like that? Why did the Rambam first prove that a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that God is non-corporal and defies any description, non-corporal, and then after that you can prove that that therefore the only type of terms one can use about a Kodesh Baruch Hu are negative theology. In other words, the Rambam says, given the fact that we've proved that the only thing we can ascertain of God is his existence, that means he's incorporeal, he has no connection whatsoever with anything which corporal, then after I've proven that, then we should prove that a Kodesh Baruch Hu really cannot be described by anything, and therefore one has to have recourse to negative theology. In other words, why is the Rambam just promising I'm going to prove it in the second chalek, which he does, and just tell me how not to speak about God in the first chalek? Now, actually, this is a general question, which I believe that Professor Strauss addresses in his famous introduction to the Penis translation of the Maimonides. He doesn't understand how the Rambam actually, in other words, he doesn't understand how the sections of the Rambam work out. In other words, he somehow arbitrarily, finishes the first section somewhere and begins with the second section. And Strauss actually mentions there's no logic to why the Rambam put what in what section. I think the answer is very easy. The first section of the Rambam we can explain is what's called Sur Meira. In other words, the first section of the Magen Avuchim is basically not proving to me anything about God, but just telling me, stay away from paganism, stay away from Azara. And therefore, a good part of the first chalek of the Magen Avuchim is taking expressions and terms that appear in the Chumash, in the Bible, which appear to be anthropomorphic, and the Rambam is telling me that I shouldn't learn them literally, but rather I should only give them a philosophical or figurative or metaphorical understanding. That's Sur Meira. Stay away from paganism. Stay away from bad beliefs. Now, after I stay away from bad beliefs, then I can prove to you what to believe in. And that begins the second chalek. So the second chalek is what we call Aseh Tov. Aseh Tov means, now that I've told you to stay away from paganism, then I can already tell you what to believe, what is true, and prove it to you. So, for some reason, which actually I don't be pressed that I had to go into right now, the Rambam certainly starts the Magen Avuchim by telling me what not to believe. Maybe the Rambam felt that was much more important, or right? And then after that, the Rambam goes on to prove to me, what I should believe and why I should believe it. That's in the second section. So what's interesting is a Nasa V'Nishma. First, I have to know what not to believe, and then after that, I could try to understand really why it is true, why I'm not supposed to believe it. I guess that's a derech hatera, nasa v'nishma. In any case, that's what the Rambam does. So the Rambam is like this. The Rambam says, lo yitachet eifo sheye lo yitoya chiyuf, b'pnei she'en lo uvdas hayoyis b'chus la mahusay, kach she'toya yukul latzbiya al achas b'shtayim. In other words, since the Rambam is totally incorporeal, it's impossible that we can speak about his essence. Lo kol she'ken lo yitachet sheye lo mahus b'kev, it certainly cannot be composed of different parts. That the description implies Kodesh Baruch Hu is composed of different parts. Last kam of a kama, he can have different states. That we should assign to Kodesh Baruch Hu different states at different times. In other words, the Rambam says, after I know that Kodesh Baruch Hu is totally incorporeal, I'm going to prove it in the second section, therefore he defies any physical, right? He defies any corporeality. Then I can speak about the fact that I can't describe him, because descriptions and positive attributes inevitably lead to a corporalization of God, either to the establishment that God is composed of different parts, or that God changes in time. V'ilu teira shlila him elu sheroi lishtamish bem kinei lahadrich hazadatz el mashu ve la'amin legabu v'isala. Says the Rambam, the teira shlila is that which is fitting to use in order to guide the mind
to what to believe.
Therefore, there should be no multiplicity attributed to God. They direct the person into what he should know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the very important thing is that the Rambam is actually making a very interesting statement. Right? That the Rambam says that negative theology is not only kosher, but negative theology helps direct the mind to understanding God properly, believing God properly. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is that not only this negative theology, right, not wrong, sumeha, but actually it's instructive. Because using negative theology, I can understand a little bit of God. Now, why would I want to understand a little bit of God? So the answer is going to be very obvious. Because as the Rambam discussed in page 57, there are descriptions of God. God is one, God exists, God is alive. God knows. There are descriptions of God. To say that I can't describe God, that refers to what I would call physical descriptions. But to say that God is one, that God knows, I mean, no one's going to argue, but everybody's going to agree that God exists, God knows. I mean, those are descriptions I make of God. They're not necessarily physical descriptions, but certainly there are descriptions of God. How do I say those descriptions? The Rambam has already told me in chapter 57 that to say God is one, the concept of one, when I say God is one, is unlike any other concept of one. The concept of life is unlike any other concept of life. But how am I supposed to approach it and understand it? The Rambam is going to come to explain to me that really, the way to understand God is one, the proper way of understanding how God is one, or to somehow understand the ununderstandability of God as one is to use the negative theological approach, mainly that God is not two or not like anything else. In other words, or not one like any other thing which is one. In other words, what the Rambam understands is that negative theology gives me a handle on understanding exactly, if not putting my finger on the concept, at least defining the concept in a way in which I could properly use it. So that's what the Rambam is saying. In other words, it's not that theology is kosher. It's not treif. It's kosher, but more than that, negative theology is useful because it helps me intellectually comprehend the incomprehensibility of God. So the Rambam says, the last paragraph on page 144, for example, says the Rambam, it's clear. There must be something that exists other than that which we perceive in the world. We say it exists. In other words, we say God exists. In other words, we've proven, says the Rambam, means we will prove in the second chelek, that something exists other than the physical world. So he exists. That's a positive statement. Now, what does it mean he exists? In other words, when I say God exists, what I'm really saying is it's impossible that he can't exist. That's a cosmological proof. In other words, if God didn't exist, right, then I couldn't account for the world. So because of that, when I say God exists, what I'm really saying is that it's impossible that he can't exist. We say he's alive. What does it mean? He's alive. It means he's not dead. In other words, you can't see on him that he's not dead. In other words, and that gives me a concept of alive because every physical concept is a concept of death too. Yeah.
Why don't we say it's a false dichotomy? How do I know it's not?
What do you mean a false dichotomy?
That it looks like it's either one or the other, but in this case it doesn't apply.
No, because that's the proofs. In other words, because what the Rambam. No, first of all, we prove God exists. But what do you mean we prove it exists?
It can't
not exist. It cannot exist. Now,
why can't I say that it either exists or not exists? Why can't I say that?
Because if we prove, no, according to the Rambam, no, you could conceivably say in philosophy, the Rambam assumes to prove that he exists. In other words, what you're arguing is, in other words, maybe you don't accept the Rambam's proof that he exists. But given the fact that I've proven that he exists, what in fact have I proven, says the Rambam, what I've really proven is it possible that he can't exist. In other words, philosophically, I might not accept the Rambam's proof. I might decide that God's existence, we can't speak about God's existence, but given the fact that the Rambam accepts, like the Rambam said above, that we've rigorously proven, right, that he exists.
There can't be a third possibility?
No. The Rambam doesn't accept that. What?
How do I know there can't be a third possibility?
Because the Rambam proven that he exists.
But he assumed that there's a dichotomy, it's only one or the other.
Right. The Rambam has proven for sure that he's existed. We proved that. So what does that mean that he's existed? So when I say he's existed, what I mean is I prove that it can't be that there isn't a God, because then I can't count for the world.
It means we can't conceive him of him not existing. That's all it means.
That's right. That's what it is. Okay. In other words, you might disagree with the Rambam's proof, but given the fact that the Rambam's proven that he knows, he has knowledge.
Yeah, he's proved that we can't conceive of him not existing.
Right.
That's all.
Okay. Fine. Very, very good. So therefore, that's the negative theology. In other words, it's impossible that he can't exist. Or it's impossible that he can't be alive. Or it's impossible that he can't know. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is that all these qualities of God, life, living, or knowledge, or existing, the proper way to understand them is through the negative. In other words, that he's not, you can't speak about him being dead. No death applies to him. In other words, you can't ascribe to God a not knowing about anything, and you can't ascribe to God any type of a goof, any type of a body. So, in other words, what the Rambam is saying is that's really, in essence, what we really understand about God.
I can't say this chair is dead. Because things can only be dead when they could have been alive. So the two opposites didn't align. They don't apply.
No. I can't say about God that he's dead. No.
But about this chair.
But no.
Here's an example. I have a third category: inanimate, dead, alive, inanimate.
No. But the Rambam assumes it can be dead, which means it's possible to speak about. In other words, I can speak about the world. I use the concept death applied to it, not to the chair. But whenever I use the concept death in the world, I can speak about death. I can't speak about death with respect to God. In other words, of those things in the world which I can speak about death, right? I can't speak about death with respect to God. Now, you want to say, well, let's be the chair. The chair is dead. I think what the Rambam means dead means it can decompose. I think death has been understood here in a general sense.
But I'm not saying it's the same term. I'm giving an example where I would falsely apply the concept of life to a chair because it's not dead. But if you came up with that, I'd say neither life nor dead. Maybe God... He can't be dead, but he can't be alive either. Maybe he's a third category.
Okay, so you have to take this. In other words, first of all, the concept of death over here, I can generalize concept of death to the larger category. Death could be, for example, I could take something and I chop it up into pieces. Mm-hmm. Or, for example, like I could burn it.
Of course.
In other words, I could just expand the category.
There still could be a third category. That's what I'm saying. There still could be a third possibility.
No, but you see, the possibility is, I think, because when you say God is alive, that has no meaning. In other words, your argument is, well, something could be either not alive, or alive. But that's assumed. See, what we're saying about God is that when we use the term alive for God, it doesn't mean the same thing, say alive for something else. In other words, it could be a third category regarding things in the world. But when we say God is alive, we don't mean he's alive in that sense. We just say that he's not dead like anything else could be dead. That's all we're saying. In other words, objects of the world, I can say the chair is neither alive nor dead. But because I say, if I want to say the chair is alive, I'm using alive in the normal sense. But when God, I say God is alive, I'm not using it in the normal sense. No, when I say God is alive, it don't mean alive like a chair is alive. But I mean God is alive being, basically, he's not like he's not like anything that can become dead. I think that's really what I'm saying. So in other words, summarize, you agree with me? Summarize is that... The third category is possible because I'm making intelligible statements which have meaning which don't apply to a certain object, like a chair. But in God, I'm denying that statement actually has any validity. So the only thing I'm saying is I'm making a negative statement.
No.
Okay, fine. Now, and that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says is that basically, in other words, but I think the point of the Rambam is, which is very interesting, the point of the Rambam is that God in a certain sense is a limiting case. For the Rambam, it's a limiting case. In other words, basically, I exclude him from all other possibilities. And in other words, I'm not making a positive statement of God, but the positive statement of God, which is unintelligible in terms of the way I use the in terms of the word usage where I use it in the world, is basically because I'm excluding from many other possibilities. That's what I'm saying. In other words, when I say God is one, or I say God knows, or I say God is not a body, what I'm saying is he's unlike anything else, right? Which has these qualities and which can be described in, you know, normal language. That's what the Rambam is really saying. So in other words, this is how I think of God. This is how I think of God. In other words, I think of God by going through a sort of like a mental series in which I exclude him from any other category. And the ultimate act of exclusion basically refers to the concept of God I want. But of course, I cannot speak positively about him because really, in fence, all I'm understanding conceptually is that it's unlike anything else. And that's what the Rambam is saying here. Okay, now, so he says, for example, when I say that God is Kondu, the last line of page 144, in other words, is prior. What does that mean? There's nothing that Rambam says, Shein lo siba shevisil de metzias. There's nothing before him that created him. So no concept of time with regard to God, or even ontologically. In other words, I'm not saying God is prior ontologically. I'm just saying there's nothing that could have created him. It's impossible for something else to be before him. Can the sadish b'yisrael nimtza azeh she'atzmusa maspekes l'ra k'de limatzi ala she'ofim imenu nimtza imrabim. In other words, basically what the Rambam is going on, this is on page 145, is that God is prior, is that nothing can account for him, nothing caused him. There's nothing that could have caused God. And that's called God is prior. So there's no direct concept of God's priorness. It's just that. He's that object that nothing else can be prior to him. Okay? But, of course, the statement that he's prior, right? The statement is prior, in and of itself, has no meaning in a positive sense. It's only inferred from this negative series, we bring this series of negative steps that excludes more and more, and it points to in calculus you would call it a limit, saying that God is the limit of that thing. I think in calculus too, in fact, actually, I mean, how do you define that two things are, some things comes to something? You see, for any number epsilon, it has to be less than epsilon. It's also a type of a negative, a series of negative thinking. But in any case, now, the important thing is here in the Rambam is that, and it's the Rambam says, going on at page 145, right? Anu amim ala beglav b'shpas elo shu yachal. God can. He's all powerful. Yodei v'raitze. He wants. Who does it mean? That she'enu chasa oidem. In other words, we cannot ascribe to God a lack of power. Right? In other words, for example, when you say, right, in other words, God knows. It means it's impossible he doesn't know at any point. Or for example, he said, v'chen yisagdom on the third paragraph, page 145. When we say, he's one, that means there's nothing else like him. There's no oneness like him. So therefore, says the Rambam, his balacha efer shakol teir she'anu betabo say bo hu otay pula o shemash v'usa shlila hederoi em akavona bo lahazik asbusiv lo es pula se gam enish kamash b'shlilas ele ele v'en lo omer malavi yisala ele min avachina she'ata yodeh she'y shalim gabi davama. In other words, when we do use an attribute of God, we mean it always in a negative sense. That's how we mean it. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is, any attribute, anything we say about God, what we really mean to say, right? What we really mean to say is, God cannot it cannot be like anything that is not that attribute. And that's what's called negative theology. In other words, ultimately, we cannot make statements of God. Or put it this way, if we make statements of God, that's really what the Rambam wants to say. If we make statements of God, what we really mean to say is, God is not anything which is not like that. And that really gets you really a certain sense that we spoke about last week about the ontological proof. To say God is perfect, to say if something else, in other words, if God didn't exist, then something without perfection is not in God, the Rambam would dismiss that because we can't speak of God's perfection. In other words, the perfection of something else is not like the perfection of God. I can't compare God's perfection with anything else's perfection. So in other words, the Rambam would dismiss the ontological proofs because I can't make these statements have no meaning between God and anything on the world. I can't say that if God doesn't exist, something is more perfect than God. Because something being perfect in the world, not being God, doesn't have the same meaning as God's perfection. So by definition, the ontological proof of the Rambam basically just goes away. That's what we spoke about last week.
I'd say the other way. I'd say the criticism against the ontological proof goes away.
Why?
Because you can only say existence isn't a real predicate for things in the world. You can't say that.
That's
perfection.
That's the Kantian argument.
That objection, Kant's objection to the ontological proof, disappears in the case.
When Kant says existence. Is not a predicate. He's speaking about ideas because about ideas too. He can speak about existence and ideas. On God, I can't speak about existence.
Therefore, the objection of the ontological proof doesn't.
But Rambam would have a different objection. In other words, the proof. In other words, no. The Rambam would dismiss Kant's objection because Kant also concedes the fact that I can speak about God.
Right.
He just said right. But I would claim that the Rambam would object. That's what I said last week. The Rambam would object to Kant and also object to the ontological argument. Why? Regarding Kant, he would say, no, you can't compare the existence of ideas with God.
Yeah.
Regarding the ontological, Rambam would say, you can't speak about God's perfection and other perfections in the same way. In other words, to say something would be perfect because it exists, as opposed to God, you can't speak about the perfection of another object, the perfection of God, in the same sense. In other words, you can't use a language. There's no language in common with God in anything in the world. That's what I would say. In other words, the Rambam would reject Kant because Kant is a mighty b'miktzas. Kant does agree that I can speak about God in a certain sense. I can speak about existence. Like I can speak about existence of an idea. Except that it's not a proper predicate. I can't prove it. The Rambam would object to Kant, but would also object to, let's say, the traditional argument. There are several arguments. Traditional argument, the ontological proof. Because to say that if God didn't exist, that some object would be more perfect than God, I can't speak about God's perfection and the other perfection of any object in the same sense. It doesn't have a meaning. I can't compare the perfection of God, the perfection of something else. I can't make the same statements about God that I make of any other object. That's what I would say. That's what I said last week too. So Kant would reject Kant and reject Descartes too. They're both Christians. Christian theology. That's what I would say. Okay, fine. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Okay, now. What I want to do, the Rambam goes on, and I think really, in a certain sense, I want to go to page 145, the last paragraph, the last three lines. Vata, Hamayim b'sef is a you. Now the Rambam is speaking to a person who really understands the Baruch Nefucha, right? You, who are looking deeply into the Sefer. Yudeh zeh shamayim ba'ela, shem guf na'ah, v'danu b'tfachim v'amoyz, v'yadu es lanu hamidah shal chalokim behem uvrov v'danu zeh. As we see the skies, the celestial objects, and we measure them. Asechleinu chasa oinim l'gabi l'asik es bahusa. But of course, in other words, the celestial objects are objects that we can't understand physically. In other words, we measure them, we can't understand them physically. Now, I'm not sure really what the Rambam means by this, but it's not important. I'll explain to you what the concept is. For example, physicists speak about particles. What is a particle? It's purely mathematical. In other words, anyone who learns modern physics, I assume that some of you have caught up in the last 150 years of physics, will understand that physicists speak about particles. I mean, today they speak about strings, elementary particles. I mean, what are these things? They exist purely in the mathematics. In other words, the fact is that, in other words, We can speak about them, we can prove theorems about them, we can describe them in mathematics, we can even do experiments. But we don't know what we're talking about. What is an electron? We don't even know what an electron is. The Schrodinger wave equation. They're always making some argument. No, we can speak about celestial objects. We don't even know what they are. Right? In other words, they certainly are, so we don't know what they are. I mean, Rambam's speaking about things that are just far away. They're not anything in the physical world. I know. He says the chayma, right.
Okay.
The type of chayma. In other words, it's a different type of a chayma.
It's the quintessence, but his physics is just wrong.
And yeah, right. Okay. Look, it doesn't make a difference though. The idea is right. In other words, the Rambam is saying that the ain anu yicholim latar otam ela b'shemes lo muvonim v'lo b'kviyas chiyum muvonis. In other words, what we do is we use metaphors. They're not heavy, but really we don't really know what they are. In other words, if the skies, those are objects, we don't really, we can't really describe them because we have no concept of what they are. Right? So, how much more so, says the Rambam, how much more so, Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? That we can't even speak, the things we can speak about, celestial objects, we can't speak about God. Allah's come to come, much more so, says the Rambam. Kate Yamatsu Sikhlenu Kashayim, Vachal Asik is a built in Chomia Posh, Betakas Apashtus, Behuva Betsias, a Shaino Siba, where he dabbed by Indian Noisevas, Bus Ashlama, Shemashbosh, Shlebus, Shlila, Kasson, Shemana Kafisha Vanu. Now, how much more so? Right? Can we not speak about God? She came, Ain Anu Masigim Ella es Ubdas Hayusable Vab. You don't know that he exists. Vishesh Nimsa Shedabber on the Summer Shay Revealing Day Betsias, he's created everything. Etc. In other words, the gamza in a yachas amiti v'lo damis amizis elu ba lahadrich as adas lachach shu. In other words, what the Rambam saying? I think he's saying the same thing. Lahadrich as adas. Yis alamanikas the mitzayim misapik lahem as kiyum mitzorcham etc. What is the Rambam doing this mayas and saying? What's the poor purpose? In other words, he says if you can't speak up at the stars about the celestial objects. And we can measure them, this and that, but we can't speak of what they really are. We say they're heavy, they're light, we understand we can't speak about them. So how much more so God can we not speak about them? So I think what the Rambam is saying, right, the following thing. I mean, it's one of two possibilities. Either the Rambam is guiding us in negative theology. In other words, how do we understand God? How can I approach God to understand really that I can't describe God? I have to start with the most abstract things. For the Rambam, the most abstract things were what? Were the celestial objects. In other words, if I understand the relationship between the physical world and celestial objects, and I understand clearly what there, how I can't use the same language to speak about celestial objects as I speak about the physical world, only because what? Celestial objects have no relationship to anything physical in our terrestrial world. Then, if I extrapolate from that, I would have to say that God has no relationship to anything in the celestial objects. In other words, the proper way to think about God is, in fact, justly to take the most abstract concepts or construct creations and push them forward. That's what the Rambam is saying. In other words, you could say what the Rambam is doing is, how my Sefer is, that. Now, the fact is, that's what the Rambam appears to be saying. I want to say the Rambam has a different purpose whatsoever in this. In the very beginning of the Meir Nevuchim, the Rambam said that a prerequisite to metaphysics was physics. In other words, the Rambam, in fact, stated at the beginning of the Meir Nevuchim that the person that he's addressing to, he says, Hama'ayim b'sefizeh, who is he addressing to? The Rambam said clearly in his introduction to Meir Nevuchim, he's addressing a person who's schooled in physics. A person not schooled in physics is not addressing to. I think what the Rambam is implying here is that really, to fully understand the negative theological aspect of God, right, it's important to really to understand physics. In other words, only physics, probably a person who understands physics, can fully appreciate God's incorporeality. In other words, the impossible describing him. Because the physicist can draw the proper analogy between, let's say, terrestrial and celestial objects. And that analogy helps the physicist give him, or the person who knows physics, give him a conception of God's incorporeality. In other words, when the Rambam says, "Ma'ayin b'sefer zeh," the person who really understands my sefer, the Rambam has already told us in this introduction, the person who understands this book is a person who's schooled in physics. What the Rambam is saying is that, and Rambam said that physics lays the groundwork for metaphysics, that the Rambam said. In other words, a person who doesn't metaphysics without physics. That's what the Rambam says in the introduction. He's applied that here too. What the Rambam is saying is that really, to understand the metaphysical ideas that I'm trying to bring out, I'm speaking about metaphysical ideas, God is not physics, he's at least metaphysical, is that to fully understand this, I have to have really a knowledge of the physics of the world. Only by that can I really understand God's metaphysics. Now, in fact, we spoke about this a few classes ago. We spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu. God gave to Moshe Rabbeinu the highest understanding one can have, right? And how to give them understanding? By showing him the connection between all things in the physical world. In fact, that's in the very next chapter. The Rambam is going to claim that Moshe Rabbeinu had the highest hasoga, the highest perception of God's negative theology. According to the Rambam, the greater by conception of science and physics, then the more powerful my conception of the negative theological aspect of God. In other words, the more I know about the world, the more I know about what God is not. A person who's primitive, only sees the physical world, might think that God is a sun, he's a moon, he's a celestial object. Only a person who thoroughly understands the physical, the physics of the world, will have the proper theological understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think that's what the Rambam is saying over here. In other words, you want to learn negative theology, you want to know the true Jewish metaphysical concept of God, you have to know physics. Only by understanding the concept of physics will help you to push God to the highest abstract level where I can only describe him in negative terms. So long as there's a dimension or strata, a physical law that escapes me, I can never, in fact, in other words, understand God in a negative theological sense. That's what the Rambam is really saying over here. It's interesting, there's a quote from Rav Kook. Rav Kook says, as science advances, it pushes monotheism forward. That's what Rav Kook says. In other words, people think that science is a contradiction to the Torah. But the Rambam says, no. Science, as science pushes forward the horizons of what is in a scientific and a physical sense, it basically makes more powerful the notion of what God isn't. So in other words, science contributes to my understanding of the true negative theological essence or nature of the deity. I think that's what the Rambam is saying over here. I think that's the message over here. And this is what the Rambam said by Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Baruch says, you want to know who I am? I'm going to show you the entire world. I'm going to show you Avi Kol Tuvi Lefanecha. I'm going to show you the connections of all the physical world. When you know the entire physical reality, only then can you kind of appreciate my incorporeality in the Maimonidean sense. I think that's really what the Rambam is saying over here. Okay? Now, what I want to do is, I want to go on. He says, Hashavak lemi asher hasikli haschalim, but as soisim was born in boy, hasagosim hofechas lakoitza asago, over oisim ketsed maisa mischaivim irotsoine, hoifachas yediasim lo yedia. In other words, the Rambam says the praise to he who creates knowledge, who creates intellect, right, allows our understanding to ununderstanding. He converts our knowledge to non-knowledge. Basically, what the Rambam says is that In other words, the more we're able to perceive and conceive of the world, then the more we understand of what is not, the higher our understanding of what is not, and therefore the greater, the more powerful our conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. That's what the Rambam is saying. Okay, so now, on the other hand, okay, now, I want to begin now Perek Nuntes. Perek Nuntes, chapter 59, is an important perek, because here the Rabbi is actually going to bring in Psukim, he's going to bring in Chazals. We're coming to an end. The Rambam, the Perek Nuntes, is going to actually bring us to a very, very important point. Our concept of God now, while perhaps philosophically correct, creates problem. What's our relationship to God? In other words, if a person places God within the physical or celestial universe, you can have a relationship with something. If God could be only understood in a negative sense, I mean, to paraphrase the question, where's the Tati? Where's the Father? Where's our relationship, the relationship with God? Who are we praying to? Who are we davening to? In other words, negative theology, while perhaps theologically correct, creates another theological problem. Namely, we might have the proper philosophical conception of God, but does that implode our entire relationship with God? I mean, the purpose of the Torah, the purpose of any religion, especially of the Torah, is that we have a relationship to God. God speaks to us. God reveals himself to us. We pray to God. This devotion to God. How do we define these theological concepts which are paramount to Judaism with such a strong negative theologic concept of the deity? That's really a central problem of the Rambam in Maimonides. In Perek Nuntes, chapter 59, which begins on page 147, we're going to begin to discuss these questions. And this is going to require a certain amount of very careful scrutiny. We're going to see how other people have tried to answer the question. And Amir Tashem, we're going to suggest, I'm going to suggest my own resolution to this this important central problem. Amir Tashem, that'll be next week. Until then, Hatzlacha Kol Tov from an undisclosed place in Yerushalayim. Yes.